ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम वे रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 19 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द आइलैंड ऑफ जम्बुद्वीप टेक्स्ट 28 सुखावशेचितम् स्विष्टस्य शुक्तस्य कृतस्य शोभनम् दिनाजनाभे स्मृतिमज् जन्म न स्यात् वर्षे हरिर्यत् भजतां शन्तनोति यद्यत्र। ट्रांसलेशन बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस इसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। We are now living in the heavenly planets, undoubtedly as a result of our having performed ritualistic ceremonies, pious activities, and yajñas, and having studied the Vedas. However, our lives here will one day be finished. We pray that at one time, if any merit remains from our pious activities, we may again take the birth in Bharatvarsh as human beings, able to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord is so kind that He personally comes to the land of Bharatvarsh and expands the good fortune of its people. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is certainly as a result of pious activities that one takes birth in heavenly planets, but from those planets one must nevertheless come down again to earth, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Kshine punye martya lokam vishanti. Even the demigods must return to earth to work like ordinary men when the results of their pious activities expire. Nevertheless, the demigods desire to come to the land of Bharatvarsh if even a small portion of the merits of their pious activities remains. In other words, to take birth in Bharatvarsh, one must perform more pious activities than the demigods. In Bharatvarsh, one is naturally Krishna conscious, and if one further cultivates his Krishna consciousness by the grace of Krishna, he certainly expands his good fortune by becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness and very easily going back home, back to Godhead. In many other places in the Vedic literature, it is found that even the demigods want to come to this land of Bharatvarsh. A foolish person may desire to be promoted to the heavenly planets as a result of his pious activities. But even the demigods from the heavenly planets want to come to Bharatvarsh and achieve bodies that may be very easily used to cultivate Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu repeatedly says, Bharat bhumi te haile manushya janma yatyar, janma sarthakari kar paropakar. A human being born in the land of Bharatvarsh has a special prerogative to develop Krishna consciousness. Therefore, those already born in Bharatvarsh should take lessons from the Shastras and Guru and should take full advantage and should fully take advantage of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to be fully equipped with Krishna consciousness. By taking full advantage of Krishna consciousness, one goes back home, back to Godhead. Yanti madhya najino pimam. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore spreading this facility to human society by opening many, many centers all over the world so that people may associate with the pure devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement, understand the science of Krishna consciousness, and ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. Translation again. So here we are reading about the continuing glories of Bharatvarsh. Prabhupada repeatedly says in the previous verses and also in this verse that Bharatvarsh has special significance, and those who are born in this land have also extraordinary opportunity and responsibility both. And he also says that the demigods who are who have achieved their positions, their destinations because of several pious activities, are extremely anxious to take the human form and come back to be born in the land of Bharatvarsh, so that they can be, they can easily achieve the lotus feet of the Lord. Why is that so? Because in the land of Bharatvarsh, in the form of a human being, we have several opportunities to execute devotional service. All the acharyas have contributed their experience. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken birth in this land. And we have now been given a blueprint of how to progress in devotional service. It is actually the all the answers to questions have been given. It's a matter of our making the progress. And as mentioned here, the institution of Varnashram Dharma has also been established and perfected in the past. And in through this process of Varnashram Dharma, one can gradually perfect one's life by putting Lord Vishnu in the center of our lives. And then we can execute our prescribed duties. And it is said that there is no other way to satisfy the Lord. But then when we see that at the present moment, there is a complete contrast to what we are hearing. And what we hear, what we read in the Bhagavatam, sounds like an unrealistic situation, because what we think is reality is what is in front of us. It is true, what is there is the present day reality, but the reality of the spiritual world is really the challenge we have to understand, and that is the process of Krishna consciousness is really to bring us to the reality of the of our existence and the purpose and our destination. And to understand what the significance of this present day reality may be. It is not a myth, it is the fact what we see. But the connection between what is the present day situation, which is a complete opposite of what we hear, and how we come out of it, how we move to Krishna consciousness, and we use the process of Krishna consciousness to move towards Krishna, is really our purpose, really. But what are the challenges that are there today? Because if we want to really try to put Krishna in the center of our lives, mentally we understand, philosophically we may also understand, but the practical problems are that we see today the situation is completely different. And right from the time we are born, we are completely brainwashed into different reality. And today, the demoniac mentality is wants us to believe, or makes us believe that there should be a classless society. Their purpose of saying that there should be a classless society is so-called that there would be equality among all, and that the purpose of these caste system, which they very much criticize, is really the root of all the problems. Now, it is true that the caste system as existing now in many parts of the country, in this present-day Bharatvarsh, is a perversion of the original caste system. But they very intelligently use this perversion to throw out God from the center of our existence by using this obvious perversions that we see, and but that should not deter us from the reality that if we actually see that there is no classless system today, even if we were to reflect on the wrongs of the present day caste system, but what the leaders of our society were to tell us, there is no, in reality it's a fraud, there is no class, there are different classes, but the classes are based on on different factors. Today the blacks and the whites, they may have on paper equal rights, but in reality you don't see that there are discriminations on the basis of race, discriminations on the basis of looks, certainly discrimination on the basis of wealth. Today if those who are successful, the definition of success is purely on the achievement of material standards. So we can see this around us, that if someone is extremely successful materially, no matter what the means, they are considered demigods, they are worshipable, and by implication, those who don't have anything, they are practically useless. The man on the street, which is really the 99.9% of the population around us, have our caste aside, they are a nobody. We are a nobody unless we have achieved something, and that achievement is defined, quantified by material standards. Similarly, looks, those who may be blessed by certain physical appearances are put on a much higher level, and they are given that kind of attention. Similarly, strength, those who are physically or mentally or given the prowess of the inner strength, they are put on a certain level, and the others are discriminated against. And we see this in every small aspect of our life. And likewise, even knowledge, those who are blessed with higher intelligence, who have a stronger memory power, who have a sharper thinking process, intellect, they not only consider themselves, but they have laid down institutions which would kind of force us to achieve, to follow that. So unless you follow that certain process of academic process, we would be considered a pariah. That means an outcast, practically. And if you see, the Bhagavatam has said that these are the very four things which are actually where there are dangers of our getting attached, and which could be a distraction to us. Looks and intellect, knowledge and strength. And therefore we see with good reason that around us, these are the four pillars in which the judgment of individuals are made. And those who are, so there is a discrimination system. It may be subtle, and this is not on individuals also, this is also on the level of countries. Those countries which are successful, might is right, they will be looked up upon. And those who are, like say, in many of the African countries, many of the Asian countries, are used in a very derogatory term, and considered useless because they are poor, they are uneducated, quote-unquote uneducated, they have not achieved anything. So the impression one gets is that there is a class of advancement, there's a process of advancement. Advancement means moving forward. So we are given that impression all the time, that moving forward, going ahead in life, is only by following a certain process. And when we talk of barbaric or nomadic or backward, we are even those who may be following their own rituals and cultures are considered backward, are considered completely of a different era. And therefore, before we even grown up, we have already formed our views on what is progress, advancement, what is growth. If those of you who follow, who are in business or economics, or those who are students of economics, you would, if you read newspapers, if you read any of the economic papers, the financial papers, there is a constant message which is so deep-rooted that the country's, the nation's progress is based on growth. They always talk of the GNP, you know, the gross national product, which is the definition of what the worth of a country is. We have the union budget coming up in 3-4 days' time. I think on probably Monday or Tuesday. Every year, that's the kind of budget for the country. And you will see that they will be talking only on what they call growth. But then this growth, this push towards growth, means how is it achieved? It is achieved by fueling consumption. That means the consumerism is the key to what they call growth. And whether you like it or not, we are actually tempted or forced into purchasing more. Whether you don't have the money, you can take on credit. But the whole 20 years ago, we hardly had any credit cards in India. And people had, even in India, in spite of many degradation steps, many degradation symbols, but India still has several of the past Vedic practices somehow. And one of the traits has always been that India is very conservative. Even individuals, even people in villages, their tendency is to be conservative. Even the poor people, they would like to, even if they have, say, their ancestors may have given them something, some gold pieces or some jewelry, they will keep it for a rainy day, or they will store it. They'll pass it to next generations. In other words, living very simply and saving whatever they earn, they try to save. That has been a backbone of the individual habits. And that actually goes very much against the capitalist or the present day thinking. And I used to wonder, why is it that India has a 26% saving rate? Of course, the income levels may be low, but the saving rate is high, and that is considered poor. And I would understand, and then we are told that no, because the savings must go into investments. What they call investment is basically when you invest in something, means you consume. Somebody's consumption, it becomes somebody's investment. So ultimately, unless you spend, others don't benefit. Others meaning the present society. I mean, if you multiply this by include everybody in the world, you can see how the process would work, that if everybody was to save, then consumption goes down. If the consumption goes down, what they consider growth will go down. But if you see what that actually means, what is that in reality, when we look at poverty, it is an issue of disparity. Prabhupada always talked of Vedic economics, and used to constantly talk of everything, why is it wrong? Because they are talking of consumption, they are forcing you to increase demand. Well, the whole situation, if you just reduce the demand, then you have a equilibrium between supply and demand. Instead of raping Mother Nature, instead of exploiting the resources, instead of forcing, you know, by hook or by crook, the increase of these and then causing misery for the future generations. We will see some of the examples of exploitation later. But instead of doing that and trying to extract the maximum, you just reduce the demand. That is the easy way. But that would require a fundamental shift in character, in our understanding of what happiness is. And this is not what today's leaders of society would want, because it would go completely against what they are thinking. Completely against. And that is why we should be so thankful to Krishna that we have been given this opportunity to come in touch with Srila Prabhupada and his movement. Because though it may take some time for us to understand that, But it is actually a complete diametrical shift in thinking. It's a real paradigm shift. When they talk of a paradigm shift, they're only talking of for instance, when they talk of a certain economic standard of capitalist or communist, ultimately it is still on the level of the body, and also it is still a matter of exploitation. Whether it's exploitation by a few on behalf of many, or by exploitation by one country on behalf of another country, it is still exploitation. But here, Prabhupada has brought us to thinking that we have to see on the level of the spirit soul, and the requirements of the spirit soul, which means keeping Krishna in the center, living simply, seeing all others as a part and parcel of Krishna, that also brings about our behavioral changes, because we become more cooperative. We look at our own faults and weaknesses when we are not able to get along with group. And then this group is a world group. We look at people from other countries, other cultures, other races. So we then see that, yes, these differences may remain, but the fact is that the common ground is that we are spirit soul. So this paradigm shift actually is not allowed by today's leaders to be brought to the surface, because that is why true religion, true spirituality is not allowed to really flourish. In the name of secularism, when they call secularism, really secularism ought to mean that there's respect for all religions. But actually here, secularism actually means that the government is so-called neutral. They may say that we consider all religions to be, you can follow any religion. But by their very act, their own style of act is, they are perpetrating those things which actually go against the religious principles. So while they may orally say that we are neutral, or we don't mind what you do, in most countries at least, but in reality, secularism does not mean that they are an impartial state. A secular state is not an impartial state. A secular state is an atheistic state. It goes against the order of the world, the order of the world as Krishna, as God has put it, and they want to put the order as man has put it. So in other words, gradually, without saying so, they may pay lip service to saying that, yeah, God is there, you may worship, fine. They may also give symbolic gestures. Leaders would like to appease the masses. They may come to the temple on a big important day, a garland, a statue, or do this, and then everyone feels that, oh, this person is also religious. These are all tokens. But in reality, by their actions, there is a whole approach in which the Supreme Lord is taken out of the social system. Why? Because then the man system is allowed to flourish, and what is that system? That system is where we are the masters. We can solve our own problems. You will see there is hardly any problem. I would challenge you to think of any problem which today there is no solution on paper. Even about death, you will still see, scientists will say that many people will believe these scientists, but they say that it's a matter of time. It's like, as Prabhupada said, it's a post-dated check. You can't encash it now because there is nothing in the bank, but they're saying that in 20 years' time or in 40 years' time, we will do this and that. So they purportedly try to give an impression that we have a solution to everything. Someday we will be able to arrest the aging process. Someday we'll be able to reverse it. Someday we'll be able to, we are sure we'll be able to stop death. That means we are gradually coming to a situation where we are to believe that man can control his own destiny and that he can make the future. You will see that when we talked of discrimination when the people who are successful are considered very great. Now, they will also say that we have achieved this by your determination and your intelligence. If you just awaken your intelligence and you are really determined, you put in hard work, anyone can achieve it. But they forget the reality. What is in our destiny will happen. that we come with our own karmas, we come with our own background, and Krishna has put us in various places. So not everybody has the same traits. Some people are having a special trait, and that is where the Varnashram Dharma very wonderfully and perfectly recognizes that each one according to his or her trait. So the categorization does take place, but on a natural basis, not on a discriminatory basis. So in reality, we are all equal, and Prabhupada has established this ISKCON movement to try to demonstrate that no matter which country we stay in, no matter which cultures we come from, no matter what languages we speak, we all have a common bond. That means, and no matter what our educational background or looks or wealth may be, in the eyes of God, we are all the same. We all have the equal opportunity. And in doing so, we recognize other differences, and then we live our lives according to that. So that becomes secondary. The primary issue is, the focus is on the Lord being in all our hearts and the creator of this world, and recognizing that. So this is where the confrontation really takes place, and that is why the recognition of the Supreme Lord is minimized or in fact decimated, because it actually threatens the entire system that exists today. Because the minute they accept that there is a different controller, then everyone would ask that, what are the rules of this controller? What does he want us to, how does he want us to live in this life? And then immediately there may be again different scriptures, but essentially the major religions, the scriptures are the same, recognizing the presence of God. And of course different scriptures may have different details of the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam are far, far more advanced in terms of detail and gives so much more clarity. And so all this would really come out, and that is why it is actually suppressed. So when we talk of religion, we are talking of the existence and the supremacy of God. And when we talk of atheism, we are talking of the spirit behind today's society. Even though people may say, I do believe in the supernatural, I do believe in there is someone who controls it. But then by the actions, and by wholeheartedly supporting the system that exists today, we are actually contradicting that. So this is where we have to relate what we see, what we hear, what we read, when we come in touch with the basis of Krishna consciousness. This is how we have to relate it to our lives. When we take up to chanting the holy names of the Lord, when we take to hearing the philosophy, following a certain lifestyle, trying to simplify our lives, what is the significance of that? That by putting Krishna in the center, we actually try to anxiously follow or try to understand what what he wants from us, and how does it relate. We may or may not understand that immediately. We look to people who may understand us, who understand that, who may help us. And in this way, we try to live our life. In other words, we are anxious to know the laws of God, and how do we equate it with our present day responsibilities. And Krishna will not make it easy, because where is the struggle if everything is simple? And without the struggle, Krishna cannot... I mean, how do we show our love for Krishna? We may profess that, but it can only come through our action of showing the struggle. It doesn't matter when we may fall down 2-3 times, we may trip, we may go deviate off the track. But if the fundamental approach is the same, sooner or later we will come back to, because Krishna will take us, and he will see that we have that desire to relate whatever we do in his service, and gradually develop that love for him, which is dormant in our hearts. So this is the life of Krishna consciousness that we are told, that consciousness of his existence, his supremacy, and how it relates to everything that we do. And this is where the role of the Guru, Acharyas, and other senior Vaishnavas come in, where we can then try to see and follow their life related to our lives and fulfill what Prabhupada says here, that in Bharatvarsh, one's Krishna consciousness naturally awakens. Now, this Bharatvarsh means this is the Vedic civilization that we're talking of. Much of it has been eroded, but some of it remains, and that also is being gradually eroded by today's leaders. But that is why we have to be in a, when we hear that Prabhupada built a house in which the whole world can live, it means that this is the house which where we take shelter, and then we also have a home or a house where we need to live for our external purposes, for our external responsibilities. It may be hostel, it may be living with our parents, it may be in a situation where we may not be comfortable or may not be able to even completely follow the way we want to for the time being, Krishna consciousness. But we also have another home. The real home has also been given to us. There, the walls of, say, Radha Gopinath temple or other ISKCON temples are there. The walls of wherever the deities are and wherever we associate with devotees. So much of it lies in our hands. It is not that nobody can say we are in a hopeless situation. Everywhere there is hope, and when there's a problem, there's also a solution given. But the solution is never given straightforwardly. It is given in a way where we need to struggle for it. But to understand that, I would take a couple of minutes to understand some of the exploitations that are going on today, so that we understand the reality and do not get carried away by the propaganda of so-called growth and other, because the push is for immediate success and to change our lifestyle. The effort made is to see that individuals change and become what the governments or the leaders would want us to be. For instance, we are told that the biggest problem is overpopulation. Some of the biggest industry leaders will talk of this, that today, particularly problem of India and China is, especially India, is because there's too much population. So the counter to that has been, the way they have tried to do is because populations, because they want to exploit the resources and they want to maintain a very high level of standard of living, and they fear that resources of the world may get depleted. So the simple answer would be that the procreation can be less, but instead of reducing their propensity for sex, which is really the fundamental basis for material pleasure, instead of that promiscuity increases. And in fact is exploited to the full, and at the same time abortion is encouraged, so by which the population gets decimated. 40 million abortions, means 40 million murders take place every year. 40 million unseen children are flushed out, in that way there are many countries where the population has now stagnated, which is what they want, so that the remaining people can benefit. And this is what they want to bring into India. And then they would propagate it by saying that the poor people are suffering and one needs to reduce the population. But you will be surprised that there is a statistic which shows that the entire population of the world, that is 6 billion people, can be fitted into a small country like France. If the entire population, 6 billion people, are fitted into a country which is very small, France, which is hardly a speck if you see in the whole world globe, even then each person, each adult
man, woman and child will have 975 square feet per person. So there is no space problem. We're talking of only one country, France, and the whole population can fit into that, and each would still get almost 1,000 square feet. What to speak of the whole world available. So it is a complete myth in terms of, it is a matter of how you live and how you cooperate. Similarly, economic, they talk of food scarcity, which is a complete myth. There are so many books written about it. People, even those who are vegetarians, they have been very aggressively following it. So this suits our purpose when we take some of those statistics. But one statistic alone, to simplify, that one, if only 10% of Americans became vegetarian, if only 10% of Americans became vegetarian, 60 million people more would be fed every year. Why? Because the ratio of land which is given for livestock, that means for cattle and or animals which are bred only for being slaughtered for consumption, is far, far more. And their consumption of the land is far more than someone who's just directly taking the grains from the land. The ratio is something like 20-1. So, in fact, just 10% of Americans become vegetarians, 60 million people would come. So, there is an abundance of food. It is only a matter of wrong choices and the greed. Similarly, when you talk of resources, even just one company, the largest company in the world, it's a company called Exxon. If you take their profits, and when I talk of profit, in simple terms, it means that if you sell something, and then if you sell a product of 100 rupees, and if you have a cost of 90 rupees, so then the 10 rupees difference, the surplus, is called profit. So just the profit of Exxon is $40 billion in 1 year. 40 billion is 200,000 crores. Not 2 crores, which is anyway large, not 20 crores, not 200 crores, not 2,000, not 20,000 crores, but 200,000 crores per year is the profit of one company. And this is more than the GNP or the value of many countries. So one company, so when we talk of discrimination, when you talk of inequality, these are the gross ones. How can one company have more resources than dozens of countries? It is obviously there is exploitation and maldistribution. So there are similarly the pollution, air pollution, water pollution, the acid rain, the desertification. So many lands are becoming desert. The root behind this is the exploitation that takes place, and much of it is related to the cultivation of livestock for their meat eating. So if the environment protection to a large extent depends also on the reduction of meat eating. In most cases, even the top, two-thirds of the topsoil of America has been eroded. See, these are future problems which are not given the attention today. Why? Because it doesn't serve their purpose. Because then people would be alarmed if they know the reality. But there are only a few people who see this problem and are trying to do something about it. So the expertise today is to divert people's attention to different issues. When they talk of human rights, and they talk of obvious, they talk of some certain perversions that people may be exploiting. One country exploits another, or one ruler exploits another. For instance, when they talked of military dictators and authoritarian rules, and they say that these people are exploiting their people, and therefore democracy should come. Certainly, we are not propagating. It is again a despot means a demon who is ruling, but the solution that is being suggested is given in a very, very sophisticatedly, I would say, packaged way trying to give us that we are the saviors. We overthrow the say the rulers of Iraq or Iran or wherever, who are obviously doing very crudely the exploitation. And then we will find the solution by giving the, we have a democratic rule, let the people decide. But actually the people cannot decide. They have no choice. They already are stuck in, without their knowing it, into a system which they totally sapped them, which has totally sucked them into it. So this is where the intelligence comes. The packaging is so nice that when they talk of so-called democracy, the democracy means ultimately they will choose A or B or C, and all of them are following the practically the same path. It is only whether one person does it a little more efficiently or someone does it a little less efficiently. And how do they kind of justify it? I mean, they argue with that, see, because man is imperfect, and therefore we have no right, we have so many weaknesses and faults, so we have no right to intrude on someone else's freedom. And this freedom would include doing anything. This freedom has no discipline, no acceptance of authority, and no distinction between good and evil, no distinction between right and wrong. No authority from the word of the Creator. This is not allowed, because when that comes, immediately then you have laws and you start following the discipline. So the danger for them is to remove it, and because the Supreme Lord doesn't have any role to play effectively, therefore the opportunity is to say that each one can do his own, we are not perfect, and we must recognize and respect others. Doesn't matter if there are gay marriages, or doesn't matter if there are 40 million children being killed, or doesn't matter if people are exploited, one country is exploited by another country. That is not the issue. The issue is we must respect freedom. But freedom for whom? The individual person has no understanding of what his freedom, what real freedom is. So when the atheistic leaders talk of no preferences, they may say that we have no preference for one situation of governance or another. That is actually a lie, because they already have created a system where and every action of theirs would push us into irreligiosity. So they may say that we are neutral, but for instance their support of alcohol, because the alcohol is one of the biggest revenues for all countries, which is not very well known for most people. Similarly tobacco. Many of the countries, especially in India, tobacco and alcohol are the biggest source of income. Why? Because people are addicted. Once they get addicted to it, no matter whether you increase tax by 10%, 20%, you will see again in the budget that every year an increase of 2,000 crores, 3,000 crores, 4,000 crores per year, revenue goes to the government only by increase of taxes, and most of the taxes would come, almost all the taxes, the safest increase is always on tobacco and alcohol. Why? Because there the consumption doesn't go down. See, there are other products where people may have a choice and say that I do not want to, this is too costly, I'll reduce my consumption. They can't do that. Here, they know that those who are addicted to it, no matter what the price, they will beg, borrow or steal. So this is the way government exploits it. Similarly, lotteries and gambling is one of the biggest sources of income for countries, all countries, including India. So, where is the question of being neutral? An atheistic state, a secular state is actually an atheistic, because there is no place for religion. If the Lord comes, then all the rules will have to be followed. So basically, the strength of any society depends on people. It doesn't depend on, ultimately, it is the quality of the people, the character of the people, and which in turn would be determined by those who believe that there is room for sacrifice, there is room for accepting other people's happiness rather than our own. When we try to cooperate with others, when we try to reduce the competitive spirit, all these are completely alien and in fact contrary to today's norms. Today, unless you have that competitive juices, as they say, the competitive juice flowing in you, you will be washed out. And you are considered, and you are made to feel as if you are a nobody. You are actually a parasite in society. In the Western world, if you are 17 or 18 and if your children are still living with you, there is something wrong with them. That is the way they are made to feel. But this is the way they break down families. In India, is also in the cities, is coming. In the villages, today, we still see that there is a bond, and at least there is some understanding that there is a need for families to stay together, which means that there is a responsibility for the children. When they grow older, they have to take care of their parents. These are basic things which are, I would say, human, but that is what is being suppressed. The whole lifestyle changes, each one for his own. Now you have old people's homes, you just put them there, and then so they sign a check, and then that's fine. And they can't even protest. Half the time they're not even aware of what's going on. So and because the allure of what the West is doing is so strong, that we are dragged into that level. So the remnants of Bharatvarsh that we hear about are fast eroding. So the only hope we have is when we keep we use our intelligence to understand what is important for us. And if we have been given the incalculable good fortune and unbelievable for good fortune of somehow, due to the causeless mercy only, have been come in contact with genuine devotees, with Krishna, then even if it is just a tenuous hold, you know, we may not have a strong hold, we may be just having a curiosity, even then we should really try to solidify that, try to increase that, strengthen that link, because we, no matter what the obstacles may be, or no matter our own weaknesses may overcome us, we may have many major distractions, major conditionings, but this opportunity that we've given is beyond our comprehension. We will never be able to appreciate this opportunity we've been given at all in this lifetime. But knowing that it is something unique, and we that's something which we have to be very grateful for, all we can do is to try to at least take the full benefit, because that is our only lifeline. It's really our only hope. If we give it up, that's why it is said in our scriptures that the biggest tragedy is someone who is actually given the opportunity of Krishna consciousness and actually willingly kicks it away and leaves it. That is the worst tragedy. So we, no matter what the difficulties and doubts we have, questions we have, but with this we must strive to hold on to, because that is the only remnant of the Vedic civilization that we see. This is the only world, the spiritual world, that we have been seeing, and actually that is enough for us to awaken this love of God. So, Hare Krishna, and we'll end here. If there's any questions or comments? Can somebody take the mic there?
Democratic rule and despot rulers. We know in today's time that most of the autocratic rulers, they are not Rajrishis, they are not representatives of the Lord or functioning on behalf of the Lord. So what choice do we really have?
No, therefore actually we, all the leaders today, you know, ultimately there is hardly any distinction between them. They may follow certain administrative rule. Somebody may be autocratic, somebody may be so-called, he may be elected democratically. Which only means that he's manipulated the system of how to get elected. But otherwise, they belong to the same caste and creed and breed. So basically, they're all the same. So my point is that there is hardly any distinction between them. I was trying to make the point that the rulers today will have us believe that in the name of democracy, which is necessary for all to be able to cast our own vote, and that will be the salvation for all, we have to overthrow the despots. So we do recognize the weaknesses on, but it is, both are the same. As far as we are concerned, it is really two sides of the same coin. So for a devotee, it is neither are going to give any hope, and both are going to plunge us more and more into the same kind of system of putting the Supreme Lord out of the picture. Let's take a case of Singapore. Because Singapore is, because it is very small and extremely efficiently managed, so the standard of living is very high. Or take Switzerland. Switzerland and Singapore too, I can say, where both being very small, very intelligent people, and they have managed to keep a very high standard of living. There's hardly any poverty there. And so one would say that is the ideal. But really, in fact, they have perfected a system, a materialist system, which may suit a population of a few million. But even there is no trace. In fact, they will go out of the way to see that there is no active trace of the Lord. In fact, Singapore was one of the only countries where Srila Prabhupada was not allowed to enter. He could enter Russia, he could enter so many other places, almost anywhere. He couldn't even enter. Why? Because they were intelligent enough to understand what a threat it would be. And this is 35 years ago probably. So they're doing in such a sophisticated way that, for instance, there is no formal temple that can come up. Even ISKCON centers are actually not a formal temple in the sense that it is not a recognized temple, that they will have it in somebody's home. So it's really a police state where they will be watching and seeing anything that goes contrary to what they feel is their concept of happiness and way they should govern. They will not allow it. So which means that they have all we are saying that they are more efficient than others. But the common link is that man is the master and there is no room for any Supreme Lord. This is the message comes from whether it's Saddam Hussein or whether it is some leader in China or Singapore. You know. So they are all the same. As far as we are concerned, it's the same. We have to make the best of that. We have to live and discharge our responsibility externally, no doubt. But we should not be carried away. That should not be our driving force in life. One may say that, okay, you are saying all this, but then we have to live. Yes, of course we have to live. But then we are not against technology. Prabhupada constantly said that. We are not against technology, for instance. But it's the use of the technology, or the consciousness that is behind it. So consciousness is in our hands. It's in each individual person's hand, what is our consciousness, whatever we may do. You may be sitting in the same office as somebody else. But if we see what our real future, future is, what our internal goal is, then we could continue to do that. We may try to excel also, but then we may use the benefit from that in terms of any whatever little power or prestige or money or position that is given. We do it in the right consciousness. So no matter what the circumstances, ultimately it comes down to our own consciousness and our desires. I think Dr. Garg wanted to speak.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you very much for the enlightened and class. I just was wondering, and if I understand correctly, if Bharatvarsh is, if the demigods are aspiring to be man, to be born in Bharatvarsh, it should have been a place, a very pious and pure place. And today, if it is pure and pure place, it should have been a land of Lord. Why more and more people and more generation and the young people are not only turning criminals, but they are reaching the top to rule over us? And if it is because of their past karmas, why should have they been born in India, born in Bharatvarsh? Whereas we see the opposite. Those who are not born in Bharatvarsh, they become more and more pious. So much so that they come to India and they teach us piousness. I mean, if that is the result of their past karma, why should they have not been born in India?
See, when we talk of Bharatvarsh today, we see all the symptoms of Kali Yuga, and increasingly so. But then, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, when he started this movement, and because of that, we keep repeatedly hear that actually the because of the Sankirtan movement, because Krishna's name is spreading to every town and village, even a small way. So you have two things living in the majority in even in Bharatvarsh are increasingly following the atheistic rule or the materialistic rule, but there is a small, very very small minority which is very much striving to lead a God-centered life, and that challenge will be there. But so whatever little is there, the roots are in the land of Krishna. So those who are so it doesn't matter, the numbers may be less. I mean, one may look at it and say that the leaders of society and people who are at that level, they are all exploiting it. Yes, but nevertheless, for those who actually desire the other world, the spiritual world, the real world, they have to seek, they have to go through, rummage through all the so-called garbage that we see and then find the jewel. It is there. It is not that it will just be put on a shelf and the whole world will see it. That's the challenge. That's the struggle. Krishna wants to see whether we have chosen, we have cast our own desire. See, if it was so obvious that even a child knows, then there is it's an automatic thing. It is not automatic. It is based on our own consciousness and our own desires. So we have to make a struggle. We have to find out what is. You also have so many obstacles in this. Even if you're looking at spiritual life, you have so many choices of God, godly men, and people in the name of God. So even so many bogus things. So what is truth and what is not? Who's representing the Lord and who is actually pretending to be God? Even that is a challenge. So Krishna puts all these, it's like an obstacle race. But the thing is, he's testing us and testing our seriousness. So that answers the issue about, the Bharatvarsh still has great relevance, and all the pastimes of the Lord and the Acharya's experiences and all are here, and they're real. Now, as far as the West is concerned, yes, there are some who are taking to it, but they also are getting their sustenance from India. Now, whether it is Vaishnavas following ISKCON, or there may be some who are also changing their lives and trying to follow by other Vaishnava sampradayas or so in the West, even then they are actually getting the sustenance from Bharatvarsh. Ultimately, they do recognize that the Lord's pastimes, Krishna, Ram, their lives are models for us. So basically, it all comes down to the importance of Bharatvarsh. Abhijit, wanted.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Since Bharatvarsh is so great, most of our friends and devotees, they are striving to go to USA, UK. So is it wrong on our part for we being born in India, striving to go abroad to earn easy money? Is it wrong on our part?
See, it's the consciousness which is really governs that, not the immediate action. Someone can say that I'm a nationalist. See, many people will say, oh, Bharat is great, I'm a nationalist. But he still will not have room for the Lord in the center of his life. This nationalistic fervor is another way of, in many cases, atheistic fervor. That is something which is more difficult for people to believe. But it is a fact. When people talk of India and I'm not anti-national. I'm just saying that we must appreciate India for what it really is. Not because just if I'm born in Ghana, I will say Ghana is the best. If I'm born in Egypt, I'll say Egypt is the best. Similarly, if I'm born in India, that nationalistic fervor, there is a certain value we attach there. But spiritual life transcends that. We understand that we don't discriminate against a person born in Bangladesh because he's not in India. So in that sense, this nationalistic fervor can take us away. Now coming to that, so if the consciousness is that I want to mold my life according to on spiritual lines, There are many devotees who, in India, the opportunities may be less. They have family debts, or they may have limited resources. They come from simple backgrounds. And they would like in 5 or 10 years to spend more and more time in preaching and other things. There are many, many devotees I know personally who have a very strong desire for that. And then in the West, it gives them a chance to save more. So they go for 4 years, 3 years, 5 years. You know, then they can settle their past debts, or they can, and some of them may settle there and preach there. So ultimately, Krishna consciousness is really putting Krishna in the center of our lives. It is easier in India, but if some people are able to do it in the West, there are communities in the West, and devotees are very active and doing very, very well, and they are starting their, you know, Bhagavad Gita classes in their homes and weekends. That home becomes a temple. They become a preaching, because there are many Indians who have gone there and who look at their own cultural roots. So if the person is going with that consciousness, and then he comes back, or he settles there, but he puts Krishna in the center, that is wonderful. In fact, that one has to admire that someone is putting that much emphasis in in accelerating. Someone is say 25 or 27, and he sees that, you know, in 5 years I can earn far, far more, because they live simply, and oftentimes if they're not married, they stay with other devotees, so they can save more and then they can come back. So, but on the other hand, if the mood is to exploit, or the mood is to join the mainstream, you know, as many people may say that going to the West means solves all my problems, it's my role model to become like Bill Gates or this or that, you know, just to improve the material standards, then we are just like other crows. And that mentality can be even in India. One may say, I'm a nationalist and I will not leave foreign. But if you're living that same life here, what is the use? Today, without naming names, we have parties which call about talk of Hindu. But their leaders, all of them, I know it for a fact, all of them, they drink. In fact, regularly drink. They eat meat. So what is the meaning of Hindu? It is a complete bogus sham. Totally bogus. In fact, they proudly break most of the regulative principles almost on a daily basis. So it is a very pathetic thing. So the thing is that, and when they talk of, there is also move to talk of Hindutva. But in Hindutva or Hindu, there is no place of God. It is such a complicated concept, there is no place of God. So we are not concerned with this and that. I mean, ultimately they are all the same. They're talking of material exploitation, and they may link. Maybe they have, maybe having slightly more piety than others, possibly, or they may have some respect for temples. But primarily, what it comes down to is we have to see the reality that we are growing old. We don't know why. We have limited time. We have to understand where we've come from, what is our link, and when we come in contact with people who are genuinely spiritual. You know, when we look at gold and we know it is gold, then we don't need to test it more. I mean, we've already tested and we've seen. Then we accept it. So when we see that, then we just try to follow that. And then we actually experience it. The final proof is not blind proof. It is experience not only in our lives, we see other people's lives. Then we see that. So it comes down to what is our root motive, you know. So we cannot judge externally. That is, in all aspects of life, outwardly, someone may be dressing some way and looking some way. We cannot say. You know, ultimately, actions will prove what is his real motive. You know?
Thank you, Prabhuji, for the good class. The question is, many of us in our professions, we are accomplices to the degradation of the country. Like, we hold jobs which are indirectly participating in the consumeristic economy in various professions. At the same time, we come to a temple which is a different tradition altogether. So we are straddling two lives. So, is there any coherent kind of lifestyle where we can, like many of us, except for brahmachari or sannyasis maybe, who are in the Vedic traditions, most of us have to live two lives. So, and not everybody is in a farm or in a. So, what is the solution for that in an increasingly materialistic society?
No, it's a good question because that is something which most of us have to face. The thing is that, first of all, we Krishna in our heart and Guru as his representative would do know what where we actually stand. That is the first thing. And that we must be clear where we actually stand. Is it something we may take as an excuse to put it, or is it something which really... and then if the reality is that, yes, we are in a dilemma, if there is an opportunity to change that, in some cases they may be able to. Like, for instance, those who are professionals in their own right, they may be doctors or lawyers, and now increasingly in the congregational development of ISKCON, the social development, there are many people who are able to work in that environment. Then that's the best. But in many cases, that is not possible. Say, they software professionals, for instance, or they may be in a retail, they're employed by some other companies. So, ultimately, Krishna sees what is our motivation, what is our life. If we are following the regular principles, chanting, yeah, we should try to avoid being in those industries which are directly, for instance, if you're in the poultry business or in the alcohol business, in the, you know, in the hotel industry probably. I mean, hotel industry in the sense, why I say, because when you're, say, directly serving liquor in the bar, for instance. Now, that's something which clearly is more offensive than if you were working as a retail salesman in a shop. Now, there, of course, they're propagating consumerism. But ultimately, we cannot be totally delinking ourselves from the responsibilities we have. So, if we may always look for opportunity and see if there's a better way to do it. I know devotees who have, they start off in that way, but then if they do find an opportunity, sometimes they come together and then they may start a business or start something together or work with a devotee. If that is possible, that's fine. But otherwise, Krishna knows what is the heart and he always sees the struggle. See, the result is in his hands. Ultimately, he's seeing, even in chanting, even in every aspect of our devotional service, he is seeing the struggle. That, and the struggle is what is the obstacle in front of you and what you want to do. When you are given a choice, life is made of always choices, every moment. So which choice do you take? You take this or you take that? So when you are left in a difficult situation and at the same time you try to do, you are always meditating on how you can do. And you can improve the situation by at least every spare moment you can try to either come to temple or have related activities. So these things can improve. And he knows that you have a difficult situation because he's created the situation. It's like having a bodily problem. Some have a disease or a problem which limits them. But that doesn't stop them. Krishna knows that they could do so much more and they want to. And they'll find it in their own way. So we don't see it from an external point of view. We see it from his point of view. And therefore, in terms of job opportunities, I think you know, most of them would be acceptable when they're not directly propagating. When I say directly, means when you are actually in the live act of influencing the breaking the four regulative principles. But otherwise, indirectly, that way, then there would be. We have to also be practical. But the goal is that if there's an opportunity, so therefore at least we can assist those programs which help developing farmlands, developing communities living on farmlands. If we get an opportunity, then that is our way of showing that, well, we may be stuck in a certain situation, but let us make the best of it and do it and put it in Krishna's service. We can do that. Okay? So, we'll end here. Srimad Bhagavatam, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.